Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, coming up next, get ready to indulge your legal curiosity with a unique blend of knowledge and entertainment on Legal Candy with attorney Candace Colucci. Each week, she unwraps the sweet secrets of the legal world, covering a wide range of topics from property insurance claims and personal injury to national and Florida law hot topics. Guests will include industry whistleblowers, industry experts, and sweet surprises. Get ready for a flavorful journey through the legal landscape. And now, let's dive in with Candace.
Welcome to Legal Candy, your go-to podcast for the digestible legal discussions and where we unwrap the sweet secrets of law. I'm your host, attorney Candace Colucci, and today we're delving into the monumental moment in legal history. We're back to the life and trial and now unfortunate passing, I guess. No one even knows what really to say about O.J. Simpson. We revisit upon his passing. Join us as we unpack the complexities and controversies of the trial of the century that has forever changed the public and legal discourse. Let's get started and talk about who we have in the studio. We, of course, have MK, our legal content writer.
Hello.
Hello.
Good to be here.
Hello. Have you had fun revisiting all of the research on O.J. Simpson?
Oh, yes. And we do have a comment from Fred Goldman about O.J.'s death.
We do? Okay.
He said, in quotes, "No great loss to the world."
No great loss to the world. Okay, we'll introduce who else we have in the studio. So we have Tiffany Cartwright, my friend and confidant and legal expert who we all go over things. She has no legal degree, but she is my sounding board for all things legal and also my best friend. Say hello.
Hi, everyone. Happy to be here.
And we have a very special guest in the studio, my nephew, KD. Say hello.
Hey, everyone.
And how old are you?
I'm 12 years old.
12 years old. And are you African American?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. So we have my nephew on the show today because he has got some opinions on O.J. Simpson. So let's start by saying, when did you learn that O.J. has died? Do you remember?
It was the 13th of April, I remember, after I got from school.
You remember the day? Okay, so how did you feel?
To be honest, it was like...
You gotta be honest.
It wasn't really impactful, but, like, it was shocking to know that he passed away.
Really? So, what grade are you in?
The sixth.
Sixth grade. Did people at school talk about it?
No, not really.
No, okay. Okay. And so we'll just ask the question. What are your thoughts? Do you believe that O.J. Simpson is guilty?
Personally, no.
No? Okay. Tell us why you think O.J. Simpson is not guilty.
So I think O.J. Simpson is innocent because the glove didn't fit.
That's your reason.
Yeah.
Just because the glove didn't fit.
Yep. Mostly.
So you like that quote that if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. That was the quote that was said over and over again. And so you really think it came down to, so what about, couldn't it have been that, you know, there was a lot of evidence that the blood was soaked, I mean, the glove was soaked in blood and that it could have gotten shrunk. Do you believe that?
Not necessarily.
Really?
Have you ever gotten leather wet?
No.
Okay, is there anything else that makes you believe that he's innocent?
Not really. It's just that.
So are any of your friends talking about O.J. or have they ever talked about O.J. and if they thought he was innocent or guilty?
I mean, not really.
It's just you.
Yeah.
It's just you. Okay, all right. So hopefully we're going to give you some more evidence that maybe will change your mind today. Possibly. Okay. So let's just delve into some of the details that we learned. We'll talk about our legal disclaimer first, just so you guys know. As we say, the content shared on Legal Candy is for informational purposes only and should not be taken as legal advice. This podcast does not establish an attorney-client relationship. All information is gathered from public sources and may not always be factional. Factual. And for personalized legal advice, please contact the Colucci Law Group, my law firm, at 727-733-9438. If we can't help you, we will point you in the right direction of somebody who can. So some more information that has come out since OJ's death. We talked about it last time that on OJ's deathbed, from what we learned, is that there was an NDA signed by his children. They took the phones away. We don't know what all happened during that time. But we've also learned that OJ was represented by an attorney, Malcolm
Laverne,
when he died, and that he has made a statement that OJ will be cremated and his brain will not be donated to science, despite inquiries about a study for the chronic traumatic injuries. So that is, I mean, I guess people are definitely people who've played a lot of football. There's a lot of donating the brains for the research of the traumatic brain injury, which has been very pivotal in some of the research that we've been able to gather, that we have found out that through people playing football for so long, that constant concussions that happen, that constant battering of the brain, has created these horrific side effects that stay with them forever. It creates early onset of dementia. It can create intense aggression, memory loss, suicidal thoughts is huge. And so that was definitely a question a lot of the people have asked, if he was going to donate his brain. And OJ said, nah. Ain't nobody gonna be able to look into my brain and figure out what maybe was possibly
nothing.
No one's looking at anything. And so now let's go back to where we were at in the trial and what we were talking about. So we were really delving into some of the evidence that came out during the trial, and I think we just started talking about Furman. And Mark Furman ends up being the cornerstone. So you've got an O.J. Simpson trial that's happening, but you've got Mark Furman, who is a detective for the LAPD, and he is one of the first detectives that are on the scene at the crime when Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman are found murdered. So just a brief background if you didn't catch us before, and if you are just hearing about O.J. Simpson's name for the first time, O.J. Simpson was a all-star athlete, professional NFL and actor towards the end of his life. And he was tried for the murder of his ex-wife, Nicole Simpson, and Ron Goldman, who were found brutally murdered at their home in 1994, June 12th, 1994. And the prime suspect in that crime was O.J. Simpson, who had a very volatile history with his ex-wife. And so based on that, it kind of led them to O.J. Simpson's house. Once they got to O.J. Simpson's house, they realized that they had found blood on his Bronco, and there was blood inside the Bronco that matched Nicole Simpson. There was also blood inside of his residence. And then that is where they found the bloody glove outside of O.J. Simpson's house. The other bloody glove they found at the actual crime scene, along with also the Bruno Maglia shoe print that they had found. It was a size 12 at the crime scene. And they also were just under the impression that O.J., who likes luxury things, would have been the same person who would have had that shoe. And so the motive was that they had not been divorced all that long, and they still had a volatile relationship, and that they believed that O.J. Simpson had brutally murdered both of them. And so the murder trial ensues after the long Bronco race that we talked about, the Bronco ride. And so now we are actually to the trial. So let's talk about this trial and some of the evidence that came out. We talked about the blood and some of the issues with the blood. And the defense's entire defense really was about, how do we distract these people from the actual evidence we're looking at and create more of a reasonable doubt as to the motive of the officers involved and the LAPD altogether. So this was not so long after the whole Rodney King incident. Do you know who Rodney King is? No? You don't know who Rodney King is?
No.
Okay. Oh, let's tell him about Rodney. We won't go down that road. But so at the time in Los Angeles, we'll tell you, you were dealing with the height of the racial discord, and what ended up happening was Rodney King was an African-American who had been brutally beaten by the LAPD police department. And what that created was a racial divide between the people and the LAPD. So you had this racial animus that they thought. They were of the opinion that the LAPD were just against black people and that they were going to find any way to bring black people down. So well, the defense, go ahead.
To add to that,
yes.
And why this is so important is because OJ kind of represented the first black man that never felt like a black man when he walked in the room. So it was so important that, you know, it was kind of like all of the white people like held on to that saying like, oh, look at OJ. You know, he's the Hertz guy. He's this. Everybody right. loves him. And then all the black people were doing the same thing. So then for them, this case to happen, it was just another thing, and then targeting him. It was just a giant blemish everywhere.
And exactly what she's saying is that OJ ended up breaking a lot of racial barriers where he became the spokesperson of a lot of white companies. Mm-hmm. And so he really didn't stand for just the black people. He stood for the white people also.
Or uniting
yes,
everybody.
Uniting both of those sides. So so the defense, their strategy was, let's bring out the fact that we believe that this was such a horrible investigation that only focused on OJ from the very beginning and was never fair. That they never really looked for any other suspects, that they went immediately to OJ's house. Right after they left the crime scene, they went to OJ's house, and that they began this kind of like zoned in investigation that was only for OJ and no one else. And who was at the head of the investigation was Mr. Mark Furman. I find it so intriguing with this trial, and MK is going to give us a lot of the notes that came from the jurors about their opinion about what took place during this trial, but a lot of this comes from the thing that I just had another trial, and what I'm constantly telling our witnesses all the time about trials is that you have to be honest. Have you heard about how important it is to be honest?
Yeah, from my mother and father.
Yes. His mother is my sister. So we learned it from our parents, yeah. And it's because when you lie about one thing, what happens to everything else?
People don't really trust, like, how you, like, it's hard to explain. People don't really, like, trust you in the future.
Exactly. Right. And that is exactly what happens during trial. When you're on trial, you are being held to the highest standard you've ever seen. There is no forgiving to a jury. If you're caught lying about one small thing, that is enough to discredit the entire testimony. And that is one of the biggest things that happens during this trial, because there is an overwhelming amount of evidence that points to the fact that O.J. Simpson is the one who committed this crime. Where I believe the pivotal moment came is not the if it doesn't fit, it must acquit. I think that was the final nail in the coffin. I believe everything fell apart when Mark Furman took that stand.
Agreed.
That was where it was. So Mark Furman is the state's prime witness, right? And he's a detective. And the sad part is if he had not taken the stand and lied the way that he did, I believe the whole case would have gone differently. I believe there was enough there for any reasonable jury to have found O.J. Simpson guilty. I know that breaks your heart.
Well, that's
but there's enough evidence to find him guilty. But what happens is, a liar is a liar is a liar, and that's what happened with Mark Furman.
So this is what I've wanted to ask you, and this
yes.
is why I'm so excited that you're my best friend and attorney. And
perfect.
Why were they able to get him on the civil side with a guilty verdict, but not on the criminal?
Okay. So we sort of talk about, and we try to bring it up, is the burden of proof. So when you are being charged criminally, that means the state or the government is charging you. And that burden means the degree to which they have to prove your guilt is very high. So when the jury is sent back and says, listen, in order for you to find this man, O.J. Simpson, guilty, you have to prove beyond all reasonable doubt that he's guilty in order for him to go potentially to jail. But if you've been charged, if someone has sued you in civil court, there's no likelihood of you going to jail. It's only about money in civil court. So in that court, the burden that has to be proved is very, very lower. It's that burden is by the greater weight of the evidence. So which means by just a little bit of the evidence more on one side than the other is enough to find somebody liable in a civil court. Okay, we're gonna take our first break of the day, and we will keep on talking about what's the difference between criminal and civil when we get back. Stay tuned.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Get ready to elevate your nightlife experience at Club Prana. This five-story sensation in Ybor City is the talk of Tampa Bay. Each floor boasts a unique style and music format. They roll out the red carpet as their friendly staff pampers you with VIP treatment. Club Prana meets Tampa's nightlife standards with impeccable amenities. Live the luxe life every evening at Club Prana. For VIP reservations and bottle service, call or text 813-758-7755. Coastal Roofing, your trusted Florida roofing experts, puts you first. They excel in delivering exceptional roofing and general contracting services, proudly serving all counties. Their dedicated team guarantees not just your complete satisfaction, but an unforgettable experience. You also get a free inspection report and damage report. Rooted in integrity and powered by expertise, they consistently achieve the right results on schedule and within budget. For one contractor, great price, expert service, Coastal Roofing. 1-800-674-3675.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Okay, so we are back talking about the difference between criminal and civil court. So in criminal, you have that super high burden. And that's because the result in a criminal court is that you can go to jail, which that's taking away somebody's freedom and liberty. So over time, we've said, since the dawn of time, that that needs to be a really high burden. You have to go above and beyond to really prove somebody that. So when we're saying that it's beyond all reasonable doubt, that means the jury has to say, you have shown me enough that any reasonable doubt I have in my head, you have already answered it and it's beyond that. That is how high that burden is. It's very high. But in a civil court, where that are two people suing each other, there is no likelihood of you going to jail because the state didn't. If the state's bringing charges, it's called a criminal court. In civil court, civil means two parties are fighting each other, two people are fighting each other, people or companies. It's nothing to do with the criminal department or the state prosecution. So because the only outcome in those cases is that someone has to pay somebody money, mm-hmm. that burden is so much lower. So that's the reason why in the criminal court, O.J. Simpson, with that high burden, ended up being found not guilty.
Well, I mean, I would have to argue that the reason why he lost is because, or they didn't get the burden of proof, went back to the testimony and the perjury.
Yes.
And being caught red-handed.
Absolutely.
Behaving in a manner he absolutely should not have been behaving.
Yeah.
Especially if he was going to be representing the police department in such a like high stakes case,
yeah,
where using the N-word should absolutely never have come out of his mouth, and if it had, yep. he should have owned it.
Yep. So that's the reason why. So in the criminal case, he ends up being found not guilty. But in the civil case, did you know that? That in the civil case, the victim's family sued O.J. Simpson, and in that courtroom, because it's a low burden, he was found liable for the crime. Did you know that? He did it?
No.
No? So in that court, they brought in similar evidence, and they said that they believed that he was liable for that crime, and he was found to have to pay them, what, $33
million?
Can I add another little nugget to that?
$33 million is what he was supposed to pay. Don't worry, he only paid $135,000 so far, yep. of it. But
so do you know how O.J. Simpson survived and what money he lived off of after they took all his money?
No.
Are you ready for this little nugget?
What was it?
His 401k.
His 401k coming from Tiffany, who does her company Paychex, does 401ks.
Yes.
That's a nice little drop of information there.
Yes.
His 401k.
So Katie, you need to open a 401k now. It's going to
be
huge. Because you're only in sixth grade. So that's what you should be talking about with all your friends, is opening 401k.
Okay. So let's talk about Mark Furman. So Mark Furman is the one who does the investigation, and he becomes the prime kind of witness for the prosecution that says that he goes, hey, I'm the one that was there on the crime scene. I'm the one that found all this blood. I'm the one that found the glove. And now we find the other glove, and we find other blood at O.J. Simpson's house. Though the best pieces of evidence that they had, that the state had, was absolutely the glove. The glove, having one glove at one place and the other glove at O.J. Simpson's house, is huge. The blood becomes also number two, but I think we've already talked about how there's a couple pieces of blood that were a little questionable, that they found out the couple pieces of them had a substance in them that usually is only found once you preserve the blood. So it further helped justify that they felt like some of that evidence was planted later on. But that's really kind of the best. What do you think? You think there's something else that was better evidence?
Well, it was kind of bizarre that he was driving up and down the throughway with a gun in his mouth and
wrote a suicide. 911.
I feel like
the Bronco was a big piece of evidence.
Kind of evidence is that? Because I remember we were talking about it before.
That would be more. I'll tell you what's interesting about that evidence is
character.
It's supposed to be more substantial evidence, but there are a lot of times it doesn't come into trial because it really is after the fact. Mm-hmm. And arguably, it shouldn't have come into trial. That evidence of what you do after shouldn't tend to show if you're guilty or not. But evidence of you fleeing, any flight, those always come in a criminal case. So that's the reason why that evidence came in. And yes, I would say to a jury, I would agree that a jury really heavily looks into the fact that if they believe that you went running afterwards, that you're more likely to have committed the crime. What do you think, Katie? What do you think about, do you know about the Bronco? The white Bronco? Okay. So after, when O.J. Simpson was charged with the crime, he was supposed to turn himself in, and he doesn't. He gets in this white Bronco, and he just takes off driving down the highway.
Really slowly.
Well, I think someone else driving, and he was in the back seat.
Al Cowlings was driving.
Yeah, he's in the passenger seat.
And he's
got
a gun.
So he doesn't turn himself in. He's driving. He has a gun, and he is now, I don't know, same time that Robert Kardashian's reading the suicide note?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, and then Robert Kardashian got the bag. Coach bag filled with all the clothes and all that, and took it. And then when the prosecution found it was empty. So they never admitted it to evidence.
Do you think it makes him more guilty that he takes off running and doesn't turn himself in?
Well, yeah, because even if you don't do something, people will still think you have done it if you go off like running, like, because you'll look guilty.
Yeah, that's what he did.
That's right.
And even though he was doing that, he still had so many fans that started pulling their cars over. I mean, just think of it.
Oh, my gosh, the signs they were holding.
They're pulling their cars over on the side of the road, grabbing like a box that they've ripped open, and like black marker that are like, we love you, the juice. That's what they called them, the juice. We love you, OJ. Like, that's how many fans that he had. So Mark Furman takes the stand. And the best part is that there's something called impeachment evidence. And impeachment evidence is evidence that that one side may have that calls into the credibility of the other side, like a witness. And that is the only evidence that you're allowed to hold to yourself, and you don't have to present to the other side before trial. So when you go to trial, both sides know what evidence is coming into that case. Mm-hmm. You have to tell them. It's no surprise. So you have to say that these are the evidence I'm bringing in. I'm bringing in this blood. I'm bringing in these pictures. I'm bringing in this. You bring in all these things. You have to tell them.
If I'm understanding you right,
yeah,
that means that Furman knew these cases.
They didn't.
Okay.
It's impeachment evidence.
Okay.
So what happens is that the other side does not know this hidden evidence that the defense has. And that is how they set up this entire case. Is they start from the beginning saying, listen, ladies of and gentlemen of the jury, we are going to tell you about a case that's all about a racial discrimination that they purposely wanted to bring down O.J. Simpson because he was an African American pillar of the community, and the LAPD hates black people, and they couldn't wait to bring him down. So not only did they only focus on him on the investigation, and the real murderer is out somewhere on the streets. But also, they planted evidence. Right? So that was their story. And the prosecution is laughing at to themselves, going, that's your plan? That is your plan? I mean, they thought this was a slam dunk case from day one. They were like, there's no way this is going to not turn out our way. So when they have Mark Furman on the case, I can only imagine being on the defense, just sitting there. Like, can't even wait.
I would be so mad if I was the prosecutor. Yeah.
So they have Mark Furman on the stand. He has testified for days. So Mark Furman is a detective. He's like the lead detective, kind of. He's the one who found all the evidence. So they're asking him for days on the stand, tell us what you found. And it is so damning. It is such damning evidence against OJ that man looks so guilty. So when the defense comes up, these are those just moments in trial. And since I'm fresh off another trial, I'm like all giddy about it because it is honestly one of the most intriguing games you've ever played. It is strategy. It's unpredictability in a world where you should predict everything that could possibly happen. It's a lot of plotting and planning. And so the defense gets up and the defense starts to question Mark Furman, who is not fearful at all. He's like, listen, the evidence speaks for itself. Like, we've brought all this. We've brought blood. We have so much blood. We have a trail of blood that goes from that crime scene. Blood's just everywhere, going all the way literally to O.J. Simpson's bedroom on his socks. That's how far the blood goes, okay? But these gloves are going to be the biggest issue. So Furman's sitting on the stand, and he's about to get cross-examined by the defense. And they ask him if he has ever used the N-word. That was like the question.
Within the last 10 years.
And within the last 10 years. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that's what they ask him. This white detective's on the stand, and they're asking him, have you ever used the N-word? And he says, what do you think he says?
No.
Ding, 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 ding. He says no. And at that moment, what that triggers is, if the defense has any impeachment means evidence to call into the credibility of something somebody said. It's usually the evidence showing somebody's a liar. Mm-hmm. That's always what it is. That evidence they're allowed to keep in their back pocket until the person on the stand does something that we call opens the door. So it opens the door to this hidden evidence. And what they had, and I think they end up finding this evidence. Isn't this person who has this evidence comes to the defense? I think that's how they initially actually find it. So the evidence that they found is, MK, tell us where these tapes come from. They have an actual recording by the craziest coincidence. They have an audio recording of Mark Furman from years prior, when he was asked to potentially be in a documentary about police officers. Okay, explain to us what we've got, MK. Where'd this video come from?
Audio. Furman was asked to be a consultant on a screenplay to provide background info about the reality of the experiences of LAPD police officers and to serve as a technical advisor in the development of this screenplay.
Okay, and on that audio video, Furman has a lot to say about the black community. What he says is, not only does he use the N-word several times, but he also says, can you imagine? He's an officer, police officer. He says that he believes that black people have no value, that they are not contributing members of the society, and that they all should be lined up and burned. Can you believe that? What are your thoughts?
That's really, really racist.
Isn't it?
Yep.
And is it disappointing to hear that from a police officers?
Honestly, because they're supposed to protect people.
Yeah. And you know they're not all like that, right?
Yeah.
There's just some.
Well, and this was an officer from 1995, so. Yeah.
Where it was a really bad racial divide. So,
In the tapes, Furman also made many references to the planning of evidence as well, and implied that police brutality and evidence planting were common practice in the LAPD. So, right there.
So that is the piece of evidence that they had the entire time in their back pocket. That they were just waiting. I mean, they waited for so long to be able to use this. And I think if I recall, the woman who had asked to do the documentary and had the audio, the video and audio, she had actually come to the defense and told them that they had this. So we also have Bella Colucci in the studio. And she is just walking around here. That's Miss Bella Colucci, our French Bulldog three-year-old. Oh, she's snoring now. Okay, she's snoring. So if you hear her little bells, that's the jingle of her collar, just so we know where she's at all times.
So I have a question. When were the tapes recorded?
They were recorded how many years prior?
I want to say 10 years.
Yeah, it was probably less than 10 years because they'd asked in the last 10 years.
It was in 85, right in there?
Probably something around that time. So that became the aha moment.
Did anyone go back and look at all of the other cases that he's ever testified against?
They could have. I mean, they could have if they really wanted to unravel him and they thought that he had been planting evidence, then potentially they could have used that as grounds for an appeal. In some of the other criminal cases.
I'm so disappointed that none of the jurors are still alive.
I know. That's so crazy.
I know.
That's really what it is. None of the jurors are still alive? What? While O.J. Simpson was just kicking just a couple of months ago?
Yeah.
I mean, we just saw O.J. Simpson in like St. Pete.
They went through a lot of stress.
That is crazy to think. Oh my gosh. That is so crazy to think that. Yeah. I did not know that.
Because there's so many loose ends to this. There's so many loose ends to this. Because I would love to know what was said about Mark Furman. Because, I mean, this would make me, I mean, I would have trouble with like someone that's like completely you can't take anything for out of his mouth. Everything KD said,
yeah,
there's nothing
like
that you can
said. So what happened there was, so at that moment during the trial, if I had been on the state attorney's side and was part of the prosecution, I don't know how everything inside me wouldn't have completely died, because that is how much I understand how much a jury takes weight in the credibility of a witness. That if they find out that you lie, and not to mention lie about something like that.
And half of them were black.
It's not even more than half. It was like...
seven out of 12
or
eight
out
of 12?
Seven of them were black. They were majority... seven or eight of them were black.
Not that matters. I mean, it mattered to me too. I don't like it.
No, but it's huge. But I mean, that was massive. No. I mean, to hear something like that. So then what happens in that exact moment, yes, whether you're black or white, a jury is going to listen and go, oh gosh. So what they immediately think is every single thing that came out of that witness's mouth is now a lie. That's what happens when you get impeached. That's why I tell my clients, it doesn't matter if it's big or small, do not lie.
And
do
all his
not
evidence.
Lie about anything.
He admitted they planned evidence.
All of his evidence ends up getting questioned, and now the jury is going, I can't believe anything he did, anything he said.
100%.
And now I'm literally believing everything the defense says is that this really was a planting of the evidence, and they have now given the benefit of the doubt to everything the defense says in absolute seconds.
And then Furman was charged.
Yeah,
as
so
well,
that is a very, if you didn't good. Know, and MK made a great statement of this. She goes, and it's sad, I mean, that following the death, the tragic death of Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman, that the only person in any type of a proximity of this crime, the only person who was charged and convicted of a crime was Mark Furman, the lead detector.
That was me. I said that.
Oh, you said that? Okay,
that was
I'm sorry.
Me. The one that has nothing to
Terry
do with
said
law.
It. Sorry, I thought that was it. Okay. That the only person who was charged with a crime and convicted of a crime is Mark Furman, who was one of the lead detectives of this investigation, is the only person who ends up walking away with any type of actual stain on their official record.
He had to pay $500.
And he paid $500. I mean, for lying. He ends up getting charged and pleads, I think, no contest to perjury, which is lying on the stand. And that the only time you ever see people charged with that is when there's a high-profile case. That's when they will charge you with that. And then he was sentenced afterwards. So we are now going on to our second break. So stay with us, and we will continue talking. And we're going to get into the pivotal other evidence, which is that bloody glove.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Coastal Roofing, your trusted Florida roofing experts, puts you first. They excel in delivering exceptional roofing and general contracting services, proudly serving all counties. Their dedicated team guarantees not just your complete satisfaction, but an unforgettable experience. You also get a free inspection report and damage report. Rooted in integrity and powered by expertise, they consistently achieve the right results on schedule and within budget. For one contractor, great price, expert service, Coastal Roofing. 1-800-674-3675. Get ready to elevate your nightlife experience at Club Prana. This five-story sensation in Ybor City is the talk of Tampa Bay. Each floor boasts a unique style and music format. They roll out the red carpet as their friendly staff pampers you with VIP treatment. Club Prana meets Tampa's nightlife standards with impeccable amenities. Live the luxe life every evening at Club Prana. For VIP reservations and bottle service, call or text 813-758-7755.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome back to Legal Candy, and we are still going on and on about Mr. O.J. Simpson. And so we were just talking about Mark Furman. Oh, Marky Mark. So Mark ends up being charged with perjury. Now, the thing that happens for a jury is that once you're considered a liar and they don't believe anything you're saying, it really becomes a fair game for the other side. The other side is going to continue to utilize that to their advantage. And that becomes a huge turning point in this trial. And I believe, this is why I believe it's the most unfortunate, is because I believe the most pivotal piece of evidence is the glove. We'll talk about the glove. Mm-hmm. That to me is there's just no way around it. I absolutely believe what had come out is the fact that the glove ends up shrinking because of the blood that was in it. I believe that, or I don't even care if it fit or not. He may have grabbed somebody else's gloves that were just in his garage from all the friends he has who may have been golfing. I don't really care so much that the glove was small. That doesn't bother me at all. I do believe that that's the most important piece of evidence, is that there's a bloody glove that's found on the crime scene. There's a bloody glove that's found at his home. What I do believe is that the only two people who've committed that murder would have been whoever had been at that residence at OJ's house, either him or Cato, or whatever his name was.
Yeah.
Cato. Yeah. Him or Cato. And I think from all intents and purposes, I watched a really interesting interview about him recently where he just said his life was just destroyed by it, that he was made out to be some idiot. And I think the juror said all the time that they felt that he was just an idiot on the stand, that they did not think for one second he could have been involved with this murder. So the only whoever committed this murder went from Nicole Simpson's home to OJ's home. That's what I know 100%. That's what the evidence shows. That's what's there. And the sad part about Mark Furman is that even if we do know Mark Furman is a racist, probably has planted evidence in his life, have no doubt about that. Has probably beat number of black people and had been unfair to them. Okay, we get all that. But here's what you cannot even believe would have taken place. What we do know is that when he leaves the crime scene and goes to OJ's home, that is when he finds the glove. So I cannot even begin to think and believe that, and there was a lot of people there when they found the one glove. So there's been no testimony. No one ever said that they think that maybe there was two there and he grabbed one with him. I don't believe that he could have had it in his mind that he was ready to set him up for murder, because I believe that when he got there, even knowing O.J. Simpson, he probably believed right away it was O.J. Simpson who probably did this. I don't think it was any question The LAPD was very aware of OJ. We have recorded tapes of Nicole Simpson getting beaten by OJ Simpson, where she is literally on the phone with 911 saying, "He's going to kill me. He's going to kill me." And she ends up dead. That means the LAPD, that was the first person in their mind was OJ. I do not believe that Mark Furman, when he left Nicole Simpson's home, seeing all of this evidence, literally was like on his drive over to OJ's house going, I gotta plan evidence. Now, do I believe that maybe later on, after he found all this evidence, that later on evidence, couple blood pieces that seemed a little questionable that were still there, maybe he planted those just to kind of seal the deal? But I don't believe the glove was planted. I do not believe that at all. So that's the unfortunate part, is because my opinion, which I don't always give my opinion, I try to stay neutral, is as an attorney, analyzing this from a legal perspective, I don't even know if I should give my opinion.
Well, let me say something before you do. All right, I'll say something before you do. So one of the things that, I'm not an attorney, I'm just a regular civilian, okay. So I can just say whatever.
Okay.
Well, I can't say whatever I want, but I comfortably can say this. One of the big factors for me is it definitely was a crime of passion.
Yeah.
It definitely, you know, there was some sort of relation. So it's been a long time, but I know, you know, I was a kid, you know, when this happened, so I definitely grew up in it. But, I mean, her head was almost completely cut off.
Yeah.
So that would constitute a lot of blood. I have a bio background, so mm-hmm. I'm sure there was a tremendous amount of blood that was coming out in all over the gloves.
Mm-hmm.
The other gentleman was stabbed 17 times or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
The strength and the anger and the vigor it would take to sever someone's head like that.
I mean, to go back, you know what was so crazy? Is I watched, you know, the reenactment that takes place. The reenactment is pretty brutal.
It is.
That after he stabs and stabs and stabs Nicole, then he turns around and he gets into a struggle with Ron, and then he stabs and stabs Ron. Then he has to go back and he lifts up literally. And what's so crazy, I thought this was probably one of the things I thought was really, besides her head being almost it's decapitated, is that he stepped on her back. I thought that was like, mm-hmm. I know this sounds kind of crazy, but I am mixed and multiracial. I mean, just to give you guys an idea, I mean, I'm black, white, Spanish, and Indian. And as a young girl, there wasn't very many people when I grew up that were multiracial. And my mom is white with blonde hair. And so I felt like when I learned about O.J. Simpson when I was little, I really connected a lot to Nicole Simpson because she reminded me of my mom. If you see my mom, you'll know.
Mm.
And then his daughter, who we both have curly, like thick hair, and there wasn't very many people that I saw, especially there was no one else in the news that was mixed like me. So I felt a connection to this story. And so I've always felt some kind of connection to it. And to the older I got that I learned more about what happened to Nicole Simpson during this time, it was just, it's so freaking brutal. So whoever it is comes back and steps on her back and then pulls her head up and then with the knife slits her throat and cuts the throat. And that's literally how it almost decapitates her. And then goes back to Ron Goldman and lifts up Ron Goldman's head and then slices his throat. I mean, it reads and sees like, I mean, you're talking about a crime of passion. Of course you are. So, and I will say it. I mean, there's no reason for me not to say it. It doesn't mean I'm not, and I'm not going to let anyone make me feel like it means if I make a decision against OJ, that it means I am not in accordance with my African-American side. Because I can sit here and tell you today as an attorney, OJ Simpson absolutely murdered Nicole Simpson and Ron Goldman. But unfortunately, the way trials work is the evidence was not presented beyond a reasonable doubt because of Mark Furman. And that is really what it was. I mean, that is truly what made them question everything and just thought, I believe that you cannot prove to me beyond all reasonable doubt because the evidence that you're relying upon was connected to Mark Furman's investigation and his handling of the crime. And we believe Mark Furman is a liar who is racist, who also plants evidence. And that was enough for a reasonable jury, unfortunately, to come back and say, I'm sorry, you haven't proven it beyond a reasonable doubt to us.
I agree.
And that's the sad part about
everything
it, is
you
that,
said.
And I believe O.J. Simpson believed that, too. That's the reason why he gets into the Bronco. It's why he writes the letter. If O.J. Simpson was innocent, okay, it's his ex-wife, mind you. They're not married. So his ex-wife is dead, and he now knows they're potentially going to try him. And he goes off and writes this whole entire letter of, like, all this stuff, and he's driving. If you're running like that, it's because he knew that that was when everything was going to come to light to him.
And he called 911 and said, I just want to be with Nicole.
Yeah.
I just want to go with Nicole.
Yeah.
Well, there's so much pressure because he was the golden boy. I mean, he represented the union of black and white America, and he just cut her head off.
Yeah. So... But it doesn't mean that I didn't want to sit down and have dinner with OJ, because I was actively trying to find him in St. Pete. A couple of my friends will tell you, because his daughter and son are living in St. Pete. And so a couple of people would tell me they had seen him in St. Pete. So I'd be like, he is someone I wanted to sit down with and have a conversation with. I was in no stretch of the imagination afraid of him. I wasn't in fear that he was going to hurt anybody. I believed 100% this was a crime of passion. This was somebody that he loved, who he felt he could control forever, and that is what an abusive relationship unfortunately happens. And the sad part about it is, I believe in with every fiber of my body, he loved her in the way that he knew how to love, which is abusive and controlling and with pain and fear. And the fact that she was strong enough to get away was the epitome of what he wanted. And so I do believe in the whole thing, if I can't have you, nobody can. But I think it's once he realized that she was with someone else and was seeing somebody else, that he was just like, I'm that's not what's going to happen in my life. Like, I want her forever. And so I don't think anybody else should have fared from him. And I definitely want to sit down and talk to him and be like, what is it like in your head to have known that you walked out of the most insane situation with the most evidence that any prosecutor has seen besides a videotape of someone committing a murder, and you were able to walk out free? Because I believe OJ was more shocked than anybody else.
See, I don't know if I agree with that. I think that this kind of exposed that he had a dark side. I think that he was always a criminal, I think it's kind of interesting that the civil case is the reason why he was ever held accountable for anything. Mm-hmm. It's how he lost his money. Mm-hmm. It's how he ended up doing time.
Yeah,
because he wouldn't have broken into to get his stuff back. I can't remember what it's called, but he had all of that stuff.
Armed robbery.
But he was going to get his things back that were stolen from him. So he couldn't call the cops, because if he had called the cops, they would have just taken it and given it to the families. So that's why he ended up doing time.
Oh, yeah. That was later on in Vegas when he goes and does that robbery.
The robbery.
But so now with the glove, let's talk about the glove scene.
The glove just gets me because for me
as a trial litigator, this is one of those moments in trial that as we were just getting prepped for trial, I had a trial team on my last trial. And when we're sitting down and I'm going through all of these things, there is a way to do trial. And I think I was telling you guys about it because I'm from sets and trial team. I have been trained for years as a very effective trial litigator. And there is a masterpiece for the way you try cases. And F. Lee Bailey, he's the one who cross-examines Furman, and as I think you guys told you guys, that was one of my mentors, who really how I learned how to cross-examine was from him. But Stetson was pivotal in making us the best. But some of the things that we learn are specifically all of the things that great litigators know. And one of them is, never ask a question you don't know an answer to. That is number one in a trial. This is not where we experiment or any of that stuff. So what happens with this glove that nobody could have imagined was going to happen was that, just so you know, in a criminal case, the defendant, O.J. Simpson, has the right to take the stand or not. That is his constitutional right. If he takes the stand, he now opens the door to be cross-examined, and they get to bring in his credibility, which means any past stuff to a degree, depending on what it is, can potentially come in. Anything he says can be questioned. So
just like Mark Furman.
Yes, there's so many reasons why in a criminal case, when I was doing criminal defense a lot, we would not have our clients take the stand is because it opens them up for too much. And really our job is, as a criminal defense attorney, our job, we don't have to prove anything. We just have to call into question with the evidence that they put forward, the state, to show that that doesn't meet the burden. That's our obligation. We don't have to prove anything. So we don't need our client to take the stand. And it just doesn't ever usually go right. So they don't have them take the stand. So the decision that's made by the prosecutor, Marsha, is that she decides that, and it was her who ends up grabbing the glove. We're going to go to the glove part. And she literally decides that she's going to have OJ stand up and put this glove on in front of the jury. And it was So let me see where it says where she actually what she does. And so I love this statement here. I was sitting near the defense table when OJ walked up to the juror box and struggled to fit the glove over his hand, remarking, "It's too small." Not only did that pivotal moment give the jury another reason to question the veracity of the evidence, but it eliminated the need for OJ to take the stand in his own defense. I mean, and it was huge. They had not tested this before. The prosecution thought, listen, what can we do? We're going to have him put the glove on. I mean, if you looked at the glove, you looked at his hand, I'm sure they thought, well, this is going to fit. It's going to be great. This moment's going to be good. It's going to show that it obviously fits. And they have him stand up in front of the jury, and they said, put that glove on. By the way, he didn't have to. He did not have to do that. This is not a normal thing that happened. Since he didn't take the stand, he doesn't have to do anything, especially for the prosecution. And it makes me think that they knew it didn't fit. And that's probably because, remember, when you have evidence, you have to let the other side know what you have. So there would have been some point in time that they could have potentially seen the evidence. Now, as far as the defense been able to touch and handle it and put it on OJ's hand, I don't think that would have been able. But I don't know if OJ knew or his team knew it wasn't going to fit, because it wasn't that big of a difference. But everybody took a little bit of a risk there.
Did you ever watch it?
Oh my gosh, yes.
I watched it live.
Oh my.
And it's so funny that I actually remember watching that live.
Yeah. So,
but he was very theatrical. So yeah. Did he even really I just remember it not even seeming like he was really even trying to put the glove on.
I don't think so either. I think that here's what I think. I think no matter what, I think the plan was when he stood up to make it so difficult. Because think about it. Even if a glove fit your hand,
you can do it.
You could have pretended like you were like, first of all, has anyone ever put a leather glove on? Have you ever put a leather glove on?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Have you ever put a leather glove? You're from New York.
I'm from Manchester.
How difficult is it to put a leather glove on?
It depends.
Ever.
But I mean,
unless it's three sizes too big.
Right.
The whole point of a leather glove is that you have to go. Remember all the moment when you have to take a leather glove and go like this to get it completely on? You know what I mean? And you're pulling it on.
And then eventually it stretches to your hand.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all
but
sorts of
then,
stuff.
But even then, once you get cold and it starts to swell up, you know what I mean? No matter what, leather gloves are not things that just go, oh, I'm just going to put it on.
Well, I mean, it didn't even look like he tried to get his fingers in the hole.
Oh, he
was just
already
like,
knew this whole scene. He was like, I'm going to make it difficult no matter what. They took a risk, and it didn't pay off. And at the end of the day, the closing arguments were, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit. A beautiful, 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 nice little theme. That's really what it was. I talk about theory and theme when we're doing trials. But so that wraps it all up, because at this point in time, what ends up happening is now the Goldman family, they have been, they're trying to see what's going on with the trust, if there's an estate they could potentially still get paid out of. And we'll just kind of sit back to see what else unravels with the demise of O.J. Simpson. So I thank everybody for tuning in today, and thank you so much for our other special guest, my nephew. Say bye.
Bye-bye.
And Tiffany, thank you so much
thank
for being
you.
Here, as always, in MK, and we will see you next week. Let us know if you have any questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, that wraps up another delicious episode of Legal Candy with attorney Candace Colucci. We hope you've enjoyed our legal confections and insightful discussions. Don't forget to mark your calendars, because we'll be back next week at 2 p.m. with more sweet surprises and special guests. Keep those legal questions coming. Until then, Take care, stay curious, and see you next week for another flavorful journey through the legal landscape.